Hello and welcome to Books and Beer. I am your host, Mike Malone. I'm hanging out in the back room of the Oath Craft Beer Sanctuary in scenic Tarrytown, New York. So if I crane my neck just right, I have a view of the Hudson and the Tappan Zee Bridge. In the other direction, it's the beer menu at the Oath, and well, that is a sight to see. Among the many, many selections, there is a 21st Amendment Monk's Blood out of Northern California, the Kent Falls Dequera Brett Table Beer, closer to home in Connecticut. We've got the Chatham Go Long Session IPA out of Columbia County, New York. And today we'll sample a stout from Connecticut and a Scotch ale from a little bit upstate New York, not quite upstate, but a little bit north of here. And I want to welcome our guest, Kevin McPartland, author of Brooklyn Back in the Day novel, Brownstone Dreams. How you doing, Kevin?
Good, Mike. Glad to be here. How you doing?
Doing all right. Thanks for making the trip. You came from Staten Island,
was it? I came from Staten Island this morning, yes.
Tell us about the voyage.
No real problem. I parked in Bay Ridge and jumped on the R train, and I got into Grand Central, and then it was an easy do getting up on Metro North to Tarrytown.
Okay.
Surprisingly fast, as a
matter of fact. Have you been to Tarrytown before?
I have never been here.
Well, it's a shame that it's a crummy gray day, but it's a beautiful little...
Well, we've had a lot of sunny ones recently.
We have. So I want to talk about your book. Why don't you first give us a little taste of what the book's about?
The book is set in the 60s Park Slope, yep. 1960s Park Slope. It's very much a street story in the vein of kind of Robert De Niro stuff, you know, Mean Streets. It's based on my cousin's life, Robert, who was a heroin addict and met a tragic end. And I actually wrote the book trying to make a little good come out of a very tragic situation.
Yeah, so a story that conceivably you carried around with you for, what, a half century or more?
Yeah.
Wow. So just an extremely violent little neighborhood. It was Park Slope, and I think it was 62. I was shocked by the drugs, by the violence, and there's a gun introduced very, very early in the book, and I think it was Chekhov that said, if you introduce a gun, you better use that thing before it's over.
I have heard that, yes.
Yeah, but no, just shocked by the amount of violence, especially, you know, when you think about Park Slope today and mm-hmm. these quaint, expensive brownstones and whatnot.
Right. There was plenty of violence, yeah, and I was involved in some of that. You know, not that I was a violent person, you know, inadvertently. Yeah. I mean, if you were on the street and you were hanging out, it just kind of came your way.
Yeah.
But I was told on a few occasions that I should have made this a memoir.
Okay.
I found out people get in trouble with memoirs, so I did it as a novel. But it is truly very autobiographical.
So 95%.
Right. Some of the incidents in there, those violence things, I was actually involved in.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. You were in a gang?
I was in a gang.
What were they called?
I was in a street gang. South Brooklyn Boys.
Okay. Right. Now you mentioned memoirists getting in trouble. Is that where they fudge some of the details and somebody calls them on it?
Yeah, I've heard of other authors have a problem with it. I personally had a problem with a short story, you know, where I wrote, John did this, and then someone would call me on it and say, you know, well, he never went there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? John never did that.
Right,
and
right,
I tried to explain to him, wait a second, the guy in Idaho who reads this, hopefully, won't know that fact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
okay.
That's one of the reasons I kind of shied away from it.
I got you. Okay. All right. So you acknowledged, well, you dedicated the book to your cousin, Robert Duggan. The main character is Bobby Dutton, so
right.
Guessing Bobby is based on your cousin.
Very much so.
Okay.
It's a combination of his life and my street experiences intertwined.
Okay. Were you guys a similar age, you and your cousin?
Similar age. We kind of shared households.
Yeah.
So I kind of, Rob was more like a brother than a cousin, than a first cousin.
Okay. It's interesting. Our guest last month, and this was not the plan, but last show, Linda Loigman wrote a book called The Two Family House, which was set in a previous era to your book, but also in Brooklyn. As the title suggests, a two-family house, two separate families, and a lot of kind of weird issues between them. So we're sticking with the Brooklyn theme here. So you don't come from a traditional background, a traditional writing background, do you?
No, absolutely not.
I think you mentioned you were a long-time Verizon employee?
I was 32 and a half years with Verizon, yes.
Retired now?
I retired right after 9/11, yes.
Okay. What did you do for Verizon?
I was a senior technician for Verizon.
Good experience?
I was happy to see the journey end after 32 and a half years.
That's a good run, 32 years. So was that the kind of job where you could sneak off and do a little writing on the job?
Yes.
Oh, it was. Did you avail yourself of that?
I did. Okay. I did during the writing of this novel. Okay. Not a lot, but you could do a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
The biggest thing with that was that I worked shift work.
Yeah.
Which was a wonderful thing for writing.
Sure.
I would work 4 to midnight shift. So I would do my writing in my high energy time early in the morning, and then I would do in spare time on the job, maybe a little bit of editing on the lunch breaks and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, was it the kind of thing where you were writing as a child and it's something you've done your whole life, or somebody inspired you later in life?
Absolutely not. I was not much of a student. I have no understanding why I have any kind of a command of the English language.
Okay.
An Irish thing?
Okay, could be. Blame it on the Irish?
I don't know. I was an avid reader.
Okay.
Yeah. I would actually play hooky from school and go to the library and read books.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah. You can almost get school credit for that if you cleared it with your teacher.
Right. I just didn't like anyone dictating information to me. I wanted to choose the information.
What kind of books are we talking? What really set your imagination ablaze?
I don't know, but I would just pick them up and be fascinated by them.
Okay.
I think I was reading Hamill early on.
Okay.
You know, some of his short stories, and he was a neighborhood guy, everyone knew him.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I hung out with his brother briefly on the street.
Really?
Brian Hamill, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Pete's still kicking, yeah?
As a matter of fact, Pete just did an interview in the famous Farrell's Bar with a friend of mine, Pat Fenton, which is going to air with a documentary, Breslin and Pete Hamill,
okay,
on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh my gosh!
In Farrell's Bar.
Is Farrell's the place with the big beers, right? Am I thinking of the right
place? Big styrofoam coolers.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, they just did it. They just recently did it.
Oh, that sounds like
fun. As a matter of fact, the article is in the Irish Echo today.
It is?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, let's talk a beer. You want to sample something here?
Let's do it.
All right. We're going to try a delicious stout, well-suited for these early in the day hours. Let me read a little something about what we're going to have here. It is from Two Roads Brewing, which is based in Stratford, Connecticut. And I was on 95 coming back from Cape Cod just yesterday, and I saw a sign that said Two Roads had sponsored the cleanup of 1 mile. You know, you might have like Bette Midler,
yes,
and Queen sponsoring,
yes, yes,
you know, exit 45 before.
I know exactly what you're referring to.
So Two Roads was good enough to sponsor cleaning of part of 95, which I'm sure needed it. So thank you to Two Roads. We will pay back their goodwill with a taste of the Espressway, not Expressway, the Espressway Cold Brew Coffee Stout. This is what it says, straight from the Oath menu board here. In a process unique to Two Roads, we mixed a locally roasted Ethiopian Sumatra blend of beans with a rich oatmeal stout under pressure. Now, under pressure, I don't know if that meant that the brewmaster was screaming at somebody making this delicious elixir or not, but it was made under pressure. So let's start with the color. It's a dark beer.
It looks like Guinness.
I know you're a Guinness drinker,
right.
So yeah. Pitch black, I'd say. Give it a smell. What do you smell? Anything? Some coffee notes?
Light bouquet, as they say.
Okay, good. Let's try it.
All right, cheers to Two Roads.
Yeah, cheers to making the way to Tarrytown today.
Good. I could drink this.
Okay. Can you taste the espresso beans in there?
I can. It's interesting. Interesting taste.
Yeah.
Interesting taste sensation, yeah.
Yeah, I know you're a stout drinker. A bit.
That's interesting. It's light, though. It's not really heavy.
Yeah. Now, the alcohol on this is a 6.5%, so a little bit more than a Guinness. Not really something that would knock you on your butt. But, yeah, you can definitely sense the coffee aroma and the taste, and yeah, just a deep, dark, malty, yummy brew. I'm gonna take another sip here.
Yeah, me too. Not bad at all.
Yeah, no, that goes well with, like I said, the maybe an early lunch or something for earlier in the day. That could double for breakfast, I guess. All right, so we will sample another one in a bit, but that, again, was the Two Roads Expressway Cold Brew Coffee Stout made from the good folks at Two Roads up in Stratford, Connecticut. Okay, and I want to talk a little bit about the beer mentioned in the book, and it definitely was not a delicious oatmeal stout. One that struck me here, the Rheingold Chug-a-Mug. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Tell us about the Rheingold Chug-a-Mug.
The Rheingold Chug-a-Mug. It was a gimmicky thing that Rheingold came out with way back when. I don't know what year I'm referring to. Okay. But I distinctly remember what they looked like. They were a gray jar, like it looked like a mason jar.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember it had a silver peel-off top.
Oh, really? And it was a big mouth thing?
It was a big mouth thing.
Okay.
Right, right. Absolutely a jar, right.
Yeah. Really?
Right.
Okay. And you mentioned quite a few, was it a half-quart can of beer?
16-ounce, yes.
A 16-ounce, okay.
Commonly referred to today as a tall boy.
A tall boy. Back then, they called it a half-quart, though?
Yeah. Okay. We refer to it. That tall boy thing was introduced to me later on.
Yeah.
I said, you must be talking about 16 ounces, I have quarts.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay. So besides Rheingold, what else were you guys drinking?
Schaefer, Ballantine.
Okay.
We were fond in the schoolyard of drinking bottles, quart bottles. I remember that too.
All right. So cheap American.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beer.
Right. One of the older guys would get it for us. We were obviously too young.
Okay. Drinking age was 18 at the time, I guess.
Right. And we were like 15.
Okay.
Little hooligans that we were.
Well, a lot of time spent in bars for 15-year-olds in the book as well, huh?
Yeah. There was one specific bar where the guy would serve minors. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I did a whole thing on him. Joe Bonavito, an ex-boxer.
Oh, right, right, right. Okay.
Right, right.
Okay. And as we see in the book, 15-year-olds drinking in bars, not always a
not a good thing. Not a good thing.
Okay, good.
Joe always thought it would work out if no whiskey was involved.
Right,
but
okay.
Actually the beer would kick off some turmoil.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and speaking of Pete Hamill, I want to talk about, you're affiliated with the Irish American Writers and Artists Association.
Yes.
How'd you get involved with that?
I was introduced to Irish American Writers and Artists through a friend. He wrote a very, very big book out of Boston called All Souls.
Oh,
his
sure.
name is Michael Patrick McDonald.
A memoir, a very sad memoir.
Very sad memoir of life in Jamaica Plains housing project.
Miserable life in the
right.
Jamaica Plains, yeah.
So he knew of me from the Park Slope neighborhood. We had met each other, sort of became friends.
Okay.
And we had done readings in the same place in Manhattan, Rocky Sullivan's. And then he got involved with the organization, initially coming on as an officer.
Okay.
And then he said, hey, look, I think you should be in it. And that's how I came to Irish American Writers and Artists.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about Rocky Sullivan's, because I used to do some readings there way, way, way back in the day when my novel was but a manuscript, and they were good enough to, I guess, maybe look at my Irish surname and invite me to read along with some much, much, much more accomplished people.
Same experience for me.
Yeah.
Right. I was absolutely flattered to be reading there.
Yeah.
You know, right.
It was sort of a scary room to read in, because if I recall, you'd be in the very back, and you'd have your friends there, and you'd have people that were there for the readings, and
right.
then the whole front of the bar was an active bar, and
right.
they were not there to hear you speak. So
right.
you had to get
right.
people's attention early on.
I have seen some crazy nights in Rocky Sullivan's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You were bringing back memories.
Okay, so did you read this book, this manual?
I read many chapters in the original Rocky Sullivan's on 29th Street, yes.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
People got became very enthused with it there. Very enthused with it.
Oh, that's great.
So I got a lot of great feedback.
That goes so far.
And I had a big time literary agent involved with it.
Okay.
Because of Rocky Sullivan's.
Yeah.
Who was a personal friend of Martin Scorsese.
Oh my gosh.
So everyone was telling me, oh my God, this guy that's interested in you.
You got it made.
This could be big things.
What happened? What was he
doing? He read the first 40 pages. He complimented me highly.
Yep.
And said, excellent writing, vivid. He says, but not for me.
Not for me. There
love to see your second book.
Okay.
Come back to me with your second book.
Okay.
Which I've yet to write, but I'm working hard.
But the offer still stands, I assume?
He was an older man. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
So I know that the Irish American Writers and Artists Association, they do these salons once a month, twice a month or so, where...
The first and third Tuesday of the month.
Okay, okay, where members are welcome to share what they're working on, be it a song, a poem,
exactly,
a short story,
right,
a novel.
Right.
So were you able to use that forum to get a lot of feedback for your book?
Well, it was not so much the book. I stopped reading from it because I was sick of it.
Okay.
And I actually started reading from short work.
Okay.
And I got a lot of feedback on the short work. And it was very helpful.
Yeah.
I felt good when I read something that, you know, the crowd enthusiastically responded to.
Oh, sure. After so many hours of...
But I really had to get away from Brownstone Dreams for a while. It was, I just had enough of it. I was saturated with it.
How long did you work on it for?
I worked on it for 5 years to write it. Did two major rewrites.
Okay.
And then I tried to market it for almost 13.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I really stuck with it.
Oh,
I mean, people kept assuring me it's great and, you know, you should be able to get this out there.
Yeah.
And you yourself know how difficult the task
that
is.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it was many close calls with agents, you know, small publishing houses, and then eventually I hit pay dirt with Boann Books and Media.
Boann Books, okay. And independent publisher, Boann Books?
Boann, right.
Okay.
That's a river in Ireland, by the way.
Okay.
The Boann River.
And tell me your reaction after all these years when you finally got the call or the email from the folks at Boann Books and they said yes.
Oddly enough, I'm funny with things like that. It was anticlimactic, I guess. Would you say that? I don't know. I didn't have that like initial... when I seen it in between covers.
Okay.
Now that was
that's when it hit you.
Yeah, that's when it hit me.
Where were you? Were you home? What were you doing?
I had a book launch at the Cell Theater on 23rd Street in Manhattan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much funded by myself.
That's when you first...
The small publisher wasn't able to help me with that much.
Yes. I know the drill.
But that's when I really caught the euphoria of it, and after seeing it, you know, in between the covers, that was quite a day. It was a great day.
Was it worth it?
Yeah.
Okay. You had to think about that. A lot of work.
That was an interesting question.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Let me think what else we want to talk about here. Back to Park Slope, back to Brooklyn. Now, obviously, Park Slope and Brooklyn is what we know it today. You know, it's trendy, it's very desirable, and people are opting for apartments in Brooklyn as opposed to Manhattan. When did it change? Are we able to like point to a time or point to an incident? Or when was the sort of tipping point for Brooklyn then or Park Slope then versus Park Slope now?
I think it started to happen. The gentrification was early 80s into the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one section up around 7th Avenue. It was the first to go, where the boutiques and fancy cafes and restaurants and bars started to come in. It was amazing to me. And then it kind of just spread like wildfire all over the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And as the years passed, it just got better and better.
Yeah. Now, when I lived in Manhattan throughout the 90s, Park Slope is where you went when you had a kid. A lot of people would just go for a bigger space out there.
Lots of babies in Park Slope, no doubt about it. Stroller land.
Right. And do you get back there much?
A lot. Yeah, right there.
Okay.
I still write there to this day.
Where do you go to write?
I originally I was invited into a space down there called the Brooklyn Writers Space.
Okay.
Where they rented you a desk with a lamp, and you paid like a monthly fee to have no distractions.
Okay.
That was on Garfield and Fifth Avenue in Park Slope.
Yeah.
In the heart of Park Slope.
So schlepping to a place to write for you.
Right. As I was doing the rewrites, and I was really, you know, really into it with the rewrites, and I completed it there.
Yeah.
And then, oddly enough, after I completed the book, I started to dislike the place. It became, the quietness was too much for me.
Okay.
It worked for a while with that book, but then I absolutely decided not to write there.
Could you seek out feedback from other people in the room there, or was it
No, I was getting that through Irish American Writers and Artists. And
I gotcha. Okay.
I made friends, some friends there, other writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this sort of nouveau Brooklyn, is it a good thing? It must be a little tough for you to kind of see the shishi shops.
It's all according to my day. Sometimes I get very annoyed down there, and other times I get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's mixed feelings.
Okay. Yeah. City's evolved,
it's a vast improvement of when I was running around those streets over there. That I'll say.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Have you been able to market the book in those neighborhoods, just to almost like a time capsule? Like, hey,
yeah, I'm still in the process of doing that.
Okay.
I get lazy about it, but I hope to do that, really get it out there with other Brooklyn authors.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. You want to try another beer?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay, good. All right, this time around, we're going to do the Pine Island Scottish Ale. So this is, I'll read the description again from the Oath beer menu here in Tarrytown. A beautiful mahogany color and smooth taste makes the Pine Island Scottish Ale the brewer's favorite. The beer uses light, pale, and caramel malts and is complemented by a touch of roasted barley that makes this beer go down extremely easy. Easily? Easy.
Easy.
Easy? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, easy. All right, what do you think of the color?
Not as dark as the other one.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's.
Is it an appealing color? Does that get the...
it's okay. It appears it's almost like a shot.
You know,
a shot went into my mind.
Yeah, almost like
I don't do them anymore.
Right. Yeah, it is sort of like a spiced rum color or something. All right, let's give it a taste. Cheers again.
Cheers.
I want some good adjectives. I don't just want good or bad. First of all, do you like it? What do you think?
It's not bad. I think I like the other one better.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know you're one of your defaults is Guinness, so inclined to the stout. So pushing you maybe a little out of your comfort zone with the Scottish ale.
Right. I'd let you know if I really didn't like it.
Right.
Not bad.
Okay.
Acceptable.
Yeah, a Scottish ale doesn't really, in this age of these super hoppy craft beers, this is a little more sort of like the Scottish people, a little bit understated, a little bit under the radar, but a tasty brew. It's got some stuff going on. I like the, as they say, the caramel malts. I pick up a bit of that. This one is 6.6% alcohol, so a tiny bit more pop to it than the stout, but something kind of middle of the road for this era of craft beers and these hop monsters. So I'll give you a little background on Pine Island, because I'd not heard them before. They're based out of Warwick, New York. You ever been to Warwick?
Warwick, yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
What's in Warwick?
Not much.
Okay.
Obviously a brewery.
Well, now there's Pine Island Brewing. That's in Orange County. It's hard to say exactly when Pine Island Brewing started. You could say the inception dates back to the first time owner, Mike Cray, K-R-A-A-I, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, popped the top off a craft beer, or that it was the first time he turned on the burner to brew a home batch. No matter the date, there was an undeniable love for craft beer combined with a lot of determination that eventually turned a dream into a reality. All right, it goes on a bit more, but this is based out of, I think I saw it's based out of an old firehouse up that way.
Oh,
so
wow.
Interesting operation. Launched at the end of 2015, so a newborn in terms of breweries, so we welcome them to the fold here, enjoying the Pine Island Scottish Ale. I'll take one more sip and then we'll get back to the book, and we're going to do the speed round coming up.
Okay.
So hope you got your running shoes.
I'm ready.
Oh, I like that. It gets better on the second sip, I think.
Yeah, it's not bad.
All right. So literary influences. Anybody? Pete Hamill?
Yeah.
Bard of
obviously, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Pete Hamill, definitely. Literary interests. Let's see. The classic ones, Hemingway, Vonnegut. I don't know this author's name, but I was greatly influenced by the novel Pope of Greenwich Village. Oh. I remember reading that way back. I think it's
Vincent Patrick.
Vincent Patrick, right?
I
reverse it. Patrick Vincent Patrick is the author's name.
It was a great book.
It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is a great guy. He was in my building in Manhattan.
Really?
And he would smoke cigars outside the building, and we had a newborn at the time, so I was out of the building a lot just to get out of the building, and I got to know him a bit. And older gentleman, had been a bartender for a long, long, long time.
Great writer.
A great New York writer. Great guy. A huge Yankee fan, so he and I would sort of clash over that. But, you know, an old Bronx guy. And and really hit pay dirt with Pope of Greenwich Village. Had kind of an up and down experience with his books being made into movies. Hit another one that had Sean Connery in it that was not a hit. I can't think of the name of that one. But really, really struck me.
I had a conversation myself with him in Rocky Sullivan's.
Oh, you did?
And he was talking about how they mutilated his book.
Okay.
You know what I mean? With the scenes they introduced and made up absolutely stuff that he never even had in there. So, yeah. I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. He was on set for one of his books to movies adaptations. And I guess it might have been Pope of Greenwich Village. And he was saying that there was a scene set in a bar. Surprise, surprise. And the actor playing a bartender had never been a bartender, so he didn't know what to do to be a bartender. And Vincent Patrick had said that he had been a bartender for a long, long time. So he ends up basically calling the directional shots to the handsome young actor. You know, why don't you cut up some lemons?
Act like a bartender.
Yes.
Act like a bartender.
So I think he was a bit frustrated with some aspects of his movie business. But a great guy that always invited me to give him my novel when I got it done, and this was my third one, which really kind of stalled when my son was born. And the one that I finally, it's called Betsy Town, the one I finally got over the finish line very recently, so I never did get a chance to get that to him, but maybe I'll send him the finished copy.
I'm glad I mentioned them.
Yeah. Okay, all right. What are you working on now?
I'm working on another novel.
Okay.
It seems like I've been working on it forever.
Yeah.
The working title is Brooklyn Rhapsody.
Okay.
And I'm also working on a collection of short stories.
Okay.
It seems what happens is all of a sudden the muse will kick off and I'll get involved in a short story.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to work on the novel and all of a sudden I'm doing the short story and that takes dominance.
Right.
And,
well, it keeps the creative stuff moving.
Yeah, it keeps the writing muscles going, yeah.
Definitely. Is there any sort of connective tissue to the short stories? Are they memoirish or Old Brooklyn? Or?
They always tend to be Old Brooklyn, yeah, kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Being retired now, are you a golfer, a hiker, or most of your time is dedicated to writing?
Golfer, avid exerciser.
Okay.
Big time. A lot of golf. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You miss the Verizon work at all?
No, I don't.
No. Okay.
No.
Gotcha.
No.
All right.
I think I'm a natural at retirement. So.
There you go. There you go. Looking forward to it myself. All right, we are going to do the speed round now. You ready for this?
I am.
Okay. Best Guinness in Brooklyn?
Kitty Kiernan's. Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
Okay. Best Italian food in Brooklyn?
10th Street and 3rd Avenue, Table 87, Park Slope.
What's the name of the place?
Table 87.
Table 87, okay. Thought you were pointing to us to an individual table there. Okay. The author I'd most like to have a beer with?
If he was living, Frank McCourt.
Okay. All right. The book everyone loved that I just couldn't get into?
I got that one.
Oh, you got a...
Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, really?
1993, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember I was hearing so much about it.
Was that the Dan Brown?
Set in Peru, spiritual stuff, nine steps.
Yeah.
And almost get a cult following.
Not working for you?
It didn't work for me at all. I was just shocked.
Okay.
And the people were telling me it was wonderful. I really respected their opinion, and I was expecting really something in the book. It did not work for me.
I gotcha. Right. Okay. All right. Just curious, back in Staten Island, any good spots where you like to go and write?
In Staten Island,
yeah.
Besides my basement,
yeah.
I'm always off. I'm in Brooklyn writing.
Okay.
Brooklyn or Manhattan.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, well, that should do it for us, but a huge thank you to Kevin McPartland, author of Brownstone Dreams, for making the trip up here to Tarrytown. Best of luck with future writing and stay in touch.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Right.